Very good.
You know, that these arts cannot easily be divided into two halves. The reason will be very evident as we proceed.
Then we had better do so.
We must carve them like a victim into members or limbs, since we cannot bisect them. For we certainly should divide everything into as few parts as possible.
What is to be done in this case?
What we did in the example of weaving. All those arts which furnish the tools were regarded by us as cooperative.
Yes.
So now, and with still more reason, all arts which make any implement in a state, whether great or small, may be regarded by us as cooperative. For without them neither state nor statesmanship would be possible. And yet we are not inclined to say that any of them is a product of the kingly art.
No, indeed.
The task of separating this class from others is not an easy one, for there is plausibility in saying that anything in the world is the instrument of doing something. But there is another class of possessions in a city, of which I have a word to say.
What class do you mean?
A class which may be described as not having this power, that is to say, not like an instrument framed for production, but designed for the preservation of that which is produced.
To what do you refer?
To the class of vessels, as they are comprehensively termed, which are constructed for the preservation of things moist and dry, of things prepared in the fire or out of the fire. This is a very large class, and has, if I am not mistaken, literally nothing to do with the royal art of which we are in search.
Certainly not.
There is also a third class of possessions to be noted, different from these and very extensive, moving, or resting on land or water, honorable, and also dishonorable. The whole of this class has one name, because it is intended to be sat upon, being always a seat for something.
What is it?
A vehicle, which is certainly not the work of the statesman, but of the carpenter, potter, and coppersmith.
I understand.
And is there not a fourth class which is again different, and in which most of the things formerly mentioned are contained? Every kind of dress, most sorts of arms, walls, and enclosures, whether of earth or stone, and 10,000 other things, all of which being made for the sake of defense, may be truly called defenses, and are for the most part to be regarded as the work of the builder, or of the weaver, rather than of the statesman.
Certainly.
Shall we add a fifth class, of ornamentation and drawing, and of the imitations produced by drawing and music, which are designed for amusement only, and may be fairly comprehended under one name?
What is it?
Plaything is the name.
Certainly.
That one name may be fitly predicated of all of them, for none of these things have a serious purpose. Amusement is their sole aim.
That again I understand.
Then there is a class which provides materials for all these, out of which and in which the arts already mentioned fabricate their works. This manifold class, I say, which is the creation and offspring of many other arts, may I not rank six?
What do you mean?
I am referring to gold, silver, and other metals, and all that wood cutting and shearing of every sort provides for the art of carpentry and plating. And there is the process of barking and stripping the cuticle of plants, and the currier's art, which strips off the skins of animals, and other similar arts which manufacture corks and papyri and cords, and provide for the manufacture of composite species out of simple kinds. The whole class may be termed the primitive and simple possession of man. And with this the kingly science has no concern at all.
True.
The provision of food and of all other things which mingle their particles with the particles of the human body, and minister to the body, will form a seventh class, which may be called by the general term of nourishment, unless you have any better name to offer. This, however, appertains rather to the husbandman, huntsman, trainer, doctor, cook, and is not to be assigned to the statesman's art.
Certainly not.
These seventh classes include nearly every description of property, with the exception of tame animals. Consider, there was the original material, which ought to have been placed first. Next come instruments, vessels, vehicles, defenses, playthings, nourishment, small things, which may be included under one of these, as for example, coins, seals, and stamps, are omitted, for they have not in them the character of any larger kind which includes them. But some of them may, with a little forcing, be placed among ornaments, and others may be made to harmonize with the class of implements. The art of herding, which has been already divided in two parts, will include all property in tame animals, except slaves.
Very true.
The class of slaves and ministers only remains, and I suspect that in this the real aspirants for the throne, who are the rivals of the king in the formation of the political web, will be discovered, just as spinners, carders, and the rest of them were the rivals of the weaver. All the others, who were termed co-operators, have been got rid of among the occupations already mentioned, and separated from the royal and political science.
I agree.
Let us go a little nearer, in order that we may be more certain of the complexion of this remaining class.
Let us do so.
We shall find from our present point of view that the greatest servants are in a case and condition which is the reverse of what we anticipated.
Who are they?
Those who have been purchased, and have so become possessions. These are unmistakably slaves, and certainly do not claim royal science.
Certainly not.
Again, freemen who of their own accord become the servants of the other classes in a state, and who exchange and equalize the products of husbandry and the other arts, some sitting in the marketplace, others going from city to city by land or sea, and giving money in exchange for money, or for other productions. The money changer, the merchant, the ship owner, the retailer, will not put in any claim to state craft or politics.
No, unless, indeed, to the politics of commerce.
But surely men whom we see acting as hirelings and serfs, and too happy to turn their hand to anything, will not profess a share in royal science.
Certainly not.
But what would you say of some other serviceable officials?
Who are they, and what services do they perform?
There are heralds, and scribes perfected by practice, and divers others, who have great skill in various sorts of business connected with the government of states. What shall we call them?
They are the officials, and servants of the rulers, as you just now called them. But not themselves rulers.
There may be something strange in any servant pretending to be a ruler, and yet I do not think that I could have been dreaming when I imagined that the principal claimants to political science would be found somewhere in this neighborhood.
Very true.
Well, let us draw nearer, and try the claims of some who have not yet been tested. In the first place, there are diviners, who have a portion of servile or ministerial science, and are thought to be the interpreters of the gods to men.
True.
There is also the priestly class, who, as the law declares, know how to give the gods gifts from men, in the form of sacrifices which are acceptable to them, and to ask on our behalf blessings in return from them. Now both these are branches of the servile or ministerial art.
Yes, clearly.
And here I think that we seem to be getting on the right track, for the priest and the diviner are swollen with pride and prerogative, and they create an awful impression of themselves by the magnitude of their enterprises. In Egypt, the king himself is not allowed to reign, unless he have priestly powers, and if he should be of another class, and has thrust himself in, he must get enrolled in the priesthood in many parts of Hellas. The duty of offering the most solemn propitiatory sacrifices is assigned to the highest magistracies, and here, at Athens, the most solemn and national of the ancient sacrifices are supposed to be celebrated by him, who has been chosen by lot to be the king archon.
Precisely.
But who are these of the kings and priests selected by lot, who now come into view followed by their retainers, and a vast throng, as the former class disappears, and the scene changes?
Whom can you mean?
They are a strange crew.
Why strange?
A minute ago I thought that they were animals of every tribe, for many of them are like lions and centaurs, and many more like satyrs, and such weak and shifty creatures, protean shapes quickly changing into one another's forms and natures. And now, Socrates, I begin to see who they are.
Who are they? You seem to be gazing on some strange vision.
Yes, everyone looks strange when you do not know him, and just now I myself fell into this mistake, at first sight. Coming suddenly upon him, I did not recognize the politician, and his troop.
Who is he?
The chief of sophists and most accomplished of wizards, who must at any cost be separated from the true king or statesman, if we are ever to see daylight in the present inquiry.
That is a hope not lightly to be renounced.
Never, if I can help it. And first, let me ask you a question.
What?
Is not monarchy a recognized form of government?
Yes.
And after monarchy, next in order comes the government of the few.
Of course.
Is not the third form of government the rule of the multitude, which is called by the name of democracy?
Certainly.
And do not these three expand in a manner into five, producing out of themselves two other names?
What are they?
There is a criterion of voluntary and involuntary. Poverty and riches, law and the absence of law, which men nowadays apply to them. The two first they subdivide accordingly, and ascribe to monarchy two forms, and two corresponding names, royalty and tyranny.
Very true.
And the government of the few they distinguish by the names of aristocracy and oligarchy.
Certainly.
Democracy alone, whether rigidly observing the laws or not, and whether the multitude rule over the men of property with their consent or against their consent, always in ordinary language has the same name.
True.
But do you suppose that any form of government which is defined by these characteristics of the one, the few, or the many, of poverty or wealth, of voluntary or compulsory submission, of written law or the absence of law, can be a right one?
Why not?
Reflect, and follow me.
In what direction?
Shall we abide by what we said at first, or shall we retract our words?
To what do you refer?
If I am not mistaken, we said that royal power was a science.
Yes.
And a science of a peculiar kind, which was selected out of the rest, as having a character which is at once judicial and authoritative.
Yes.
And there was one kind of authority over lifeless things, and another over living animals, and so we proceeded in the division step by step up to this point, not losing the idea of science, but unable as yet to determine the nature of the particular science.
True.
Hence we are led to observe that the distinguishing principle of the state cannot be the few or many, the voluntary or involuntary, poverty or riches, but some notion of science must enter into it, if we are to be consistent with what has preceded.
And we must be consistent.
Well, then, in which of these various forms of states may the science of government, which is among the greatest of all sciences, and most difficult to acquire, be supposed to reside, that we must discover, and then we shall see who are the false politicians, who pretend to be politicians, but are not, although they persuade many, and shall separate them from the wise king.
That, as the argument has already intimated, will be our duty.
Do you think that the multitude in a state can attain political science?
Impossible.
But, perhaps, in a city of 1,000 men, there would be 100, or say 50, who could?
In that case, political science would certainly be the easiest of all sciences. There could not be found in a city of that number as many really first-rate draft players, if judged by the standard of the rest of Hellas, and there would certainly not be as many kings, for kings we may truly call those who possess royal science, whether they rule or not, as was shown in the previous argument.
Thank you for reminding me, and the consequence is that any true form of government can only be supposed to be the government of one, two, or, at any rate, of a few.
Certainly.
And these, whether they rule with the will, or against the will, of their subjects, with written laws, or without written laws, and whether they are poor or rich, and whatever be the nature of their rule, must be supposed, according to our present view, to rule on some scientific principle, just as the physician, whether he cures us against our will or with our will, and whatever be his mode of treatment, incision, burning, or the infliction of some other pain, whether he practices out of a book or not out of a book, and whether he be rich or poor, whether he bridges or reduces in some other way, or even fattens his patients, is a physician all the same, so long as he exercises authority over them according to rules of art. If he only does them good, and heals, and saves them, and this we lay down to be the only proper test of the art of medicine, or of any other art of command.
Quite true.
Then that can be the only true form of government in which the governors are really found to possess science, and are not mere pretenders, whether they rule according to law or without law, over willing or unwilling subjects, and are rich or poor themselves. None of these things can with any propriety be included in the notion of the ruler.
True.
And whether with a view to the public good they purge the state by killing some or exiling some, whether they reduce the size of the body corporate by sending out from the hive swarms of citizens, or by introducing persons from without, increase it, while they act according to the rules of wisdom and justice, and use their power with a view to the general security and improvement, the city over which they rule, and which has these characteristics, may be described as the only true state. All other governments are not genuine or real, but only imitations of this, and some of them are better, and some of them are worse. The better are said to be well governed, but they are mere imitations, like the others.
I agree, stranger, in the greater part of what you say, but as to their ruling without laws, the expression has a harsh sound.
You have been too quick for me, Socrates. I was just going to ask you whether you objected to any of my statements, and now I see that we shall have to consider this notion of there being good government without laws.
Certainly.
There can be no doubt that legislation is in a manner the business of a king, and yet the best thing of all is not that the law should rule, but that a man should rule, supposing him to have wisdom and royal power. Do you see why this is?
Why?
Because the law does not perfectly comprehend what is noblest and most just for all, and therefore cannot enforce what is best. The differences of men and actions, and the endless irregular movements of human things, do not admit of any universal and simple rule, and no art whatsoever can lay down a rule which will last for all time.
Of course not.
But the law is always striving to make one, like an obstinate and ignorant tyrant, who will not allow anything to be done contrary to his appointment, or any question to be asked, not even in sudden changes of circumstances, when something happens to be better than what he commanded for someone.
Certainly, The law treats us all precisely in the manner which you describe.
A perfectly simple principle can never be applied to a state of things which is the reverse of simple.
True.
Then if the law is not the perfection of right, why are we compelled to make laws at all? The reason of this has next to be investigated.
Certainly.